I think we'll move now to a more general kind of discussion regarding comments that each of you have made at different points along the way. So the first one of those questions is, come in from the audience, is do you suggest using a crop productivity index as a guide for determining cash rent values?
Well, I think if crop productivity indexes are available, certainly they are a good guide. They are not available in every state, and they aren't the same in every state. But they are a third-hand information, and probably the biggest advantage, they don't change from year to year. So it does make a good indicator. There are some other factors that these indices do not take into account, such as field size, having to farm around terraces or creeks, rocks. So there are a number of other elements that do affect the desirability of a particular piece of land, but certainly crop index numbers are a good starting point.
Okay, a question for Kevin came in here is, how should perennial crops like alfalfa or some type of trees or fruit crops that might be established on the land be accounted for in lease agreements?
Well, in the case of alfalfa, we realistically treat alfalfa just like any of our other grain crops in Kansas. If it's a crop share lease, we determine the equitable crop share based on this contributions approach. If it's a cash lease, we're going to take the approach very similar to what we would do with crops, but we would annualize the costs. I will have to just be honest and say my experience with the, tree crops, I've never dealt with those. I think you could use a similar approach, but you need to make sure you annualize all your costs. But I just have no experience in working with them, and I'm not sure if Ray or William does either. But my gut feel is we could use a similar approach. But you would have to annualize your costs.
Certainly adjusting for year-to-year variations in production and price would seem to me no different than for annual crops. Certainly the same principles could be used.
Okay, another kind of a general question. I'm not sure who this would necessarily be best directed to, but the questioner is asking, with a rent plus bonus sort of model, are there provisions to reduce rents if gross revenue is lower than the base level?
Well, this really goes back to the question whether the base rent is also a minimum rent. And most of those types of leases that I'm familiar with, the base rent has been a minimum rent as well. And so there is no adjustment if gross would indicate a rent below the base. But that is still a matter between the tenant and the landlord. The higher that base rent is, the less likely that should be as an absolute minimum rent. So certainly, in theory, there's no reason why the bonus couldn't be negative in a year that the numbers came out that way.
Okay. Another question sort of generally directed to you guys as a group is what rental arrangements would you recommend such that the tenant farmer can employ sustainable or biologically healthy practices like crop rotation or increasing tilth or organic matter in the soil on the farmland? So an arrangement or a lease agreement that would accommodate those types of investments by the tenant farmer.
Well, one thing you could do is obviously make sure you're willing to offer longer term leases. If I'm a tenant, I have the incentive to make sure I'm doing what's right from a stewardship standpoint if I know that I'll have that land for 3, 4, 5 years down the road. But I remind people that a longer-term lease, maybe a five-year lease, does not mean the rental rate is set for each year of 5 years, unless maybe we're doing, like William has said, is some kind of flexible rent. So one would be to be willing to offer to your tenant something that's a little bit longer-term than just annual leases. The other thing I would argue is that crop share leases, if we're sharing some of those inputs, naturally leads to the incentive for both parties to typically do what's best optimally. And then finally, I would argue that most of the tenants I've dealt with, to the extent that many of these sustainable biological practices are economically optimal, and I think many cases they are, I think that they are already trying to incorporate those. I mean, I think many of our producers are going to do what's best for the land, because what's best for the land tends to also be the most economical.
Okay. Well, thank you for those comments. Another question here for Ray. I was wondering, how would a pasture or cropland lease, or both if they're combined in some situations like you described, how would hunting rights be accounted for in that? Have you seen people that have worked to develop lease arrangements around that dimension of the transaction?
Yes, I have, and I'll answer it first, but I might also let one of these other guys answer it. It's merely a case of clear communication. Frequently, it's assumed that because you've got a pasture lease or even a crop lease that you're legal or eligible to go out there and hunt. Because hunting leases are becoming quite valuable right now, some of the landowners are saying, no, you have the right to grow a crop, or you have the right to put your livestock out there, but you do not have a right to hunt my deer or my pheasant. And so I think it's merely a case of clear communication, and we are finding that there is a increased cost associated with hunting leases, and so you might find that you're paying a certain amount, $20 per acre for grazing rights, and another $5 or $10 an acre for hunting rights. And I'll let William answer that also, since he's
market for hunting rights, and it's really a separate issue from the grazing rights as such. And I guess you have to have a clear understanding of who has priority over the use of the land and make sure there aren't any conflicts between the grazers and the hunters.
Okay, well, thank you all very much for your comments and insights on land leases. We've had a number of good questions come in, and we very much appreciate your responses to those. But in the interest of trying to keep this within the 90-minute time frame we set out to do, we will now move to close our presentations for today. Just one last plug here. If you're not currently a member of the AAEA or the Extension Section, we certainly invite you to join by following the URLs on your screen. I personally have found both the Association and the Extension Section to be of great benefit to my personal career, and I know many of my colleagues across the country feel similar. If you have any suggestions or comments regarding today's webinar topic, or topics that you would like to see us share with you in the future, we invite you to share those with us in the chat window. In addition, if you have any other feedback you'd like to provide, we certainly would welcome that as well by the chat window, or you can contact one of the members of the Extension Section leadership listed on the AAEA website. The speaker slides and access to the recordings of this webinar will both be made available on the Extension Section website, as well as at the Ag and Uncertain Times webpage. I want to close by again thanking today's speakers and the Ag and Uncertain Times team for their excellent assistance and the presentations on land leases. I also want to thank all those folks that have helped make this possible in terms of the technology and preparation for the event, and especially the participants in today's webinar. We sincerely hope that all of you find today's content of value in your work, and we hope to see you again in one of our upcoming webinar programs. Until then, we wish you success in attempting to meet the challenges of today's agriculture. We will post a web link here that contains all of the URLs that have been mentioned in today's presentations for your download. And thank you again for your participation. For the Agricultural and Applied Economics Association, Extension Section, I'm John Hewlett.